Glenn Hauser here with Continental Media, number 0405, produced July 6, 2004. We're a more or less monthly supplement to World of Radio, about media around the American continent, not especially shortwave. The latest edition of COM is available at the website of dxing.com, sponsored by Universal Radio for quality amateur radio equipment. Check out their new catalog via their website www.universal-radio.com or phone toll-free in North America 1-800-431-3939. Let us begin with some food for thought by George Zeller, writing in the Journal of the North American Shortwave Association. When shortwave broadcast stations started losing their reason for being, I still think they missed a big opportunity when they failed to get behind the concept of shortwave broadcast listening via car radios. Both the equipment manufacturers and the stations poorly marketed the concept. As a result, there cannot be more than a tiny handful of people here in Ohio who have SWBC N-dash car radios like I do. It's a shame. In fact, it is a disgrace, showing gross mismanagement on the part of both the stations and the manufacturers. Now the concept is being tried again, this time by the satellite radio people who want you to purchase access to the programming. We have a woman at work who just bought a car and got a short-term subscription to the satellite service from the car manufacturer as part of the purchase. I have no idea if she'll actually continue when the free period runs out, but we shall see. The SWBC stations and manufacturers never worked with each other at all on the concept of SWBC radios in the car, such as the satellite radio people are now doing with the manufacturers. This is because both the SWBC radio manufacturers and the stations were run by people who could not see a market if it stared them in the face. Their inaction ended up dooming shortwave broadcasting. It's sad. Well, we need a villain, and I have just nominated two. Despite this, Jeff White of Radio Miami International apparently does not feel shortwave broadcasting is doomed. In fact, he sees the future as DRM. WRMI just celebrated its 10th anniversary at the beginning of June. Belated congratulations. This was noted by Adrian Peterson on his DX program, WaveScan from AWR. And unlike any other program, he delves into the history of various stations, including WRMI. You may have read the transcript of that broadcast. However, you may not have seen the references he consulted in order to put that feature together. He sends those to us, and they appear in DX Listening Digest number 4096. It amounts to an extensive chronology of WRMI and Jeff White's other stations. It occupies 6 pages, quite a unique work of reference. Here's more evidence, as far as Local 1812 would be concerned, that the management at Voice of America is bent on converting it from shortwave into television. A press release of June 21st says VOA launches Spanish TV newscast to Latin America. It's 5 minutes on weekdays, an evening capsule program called Desde Washington, with news briefs on the top international and U.S. stories of the day and reports on Washington-based news and events of interest to Latin Americans. It airs at 2100 UT Monday through Friday, repeated at 2300 and 0100 via, no doubt, although they don't make it clear, the satellite upon which WorldNet once appeared, and now VOA is available. They say VOA television affiliates in nearly a dozen countries throughout the Americas are taking the program, with more being added each week. Here's an example of how the self-righteous may be attempting to fool you, an item from Media Network. Headlined, Ex-Radio Executive to Do Time for Child Porn. A former official at American Family Radio, which warns listeners about the dangers of pornography, must serve a sesquidecade in prison for producing child pornography. In federal court in Aberdeen, I guess that's Mississippi, U.S. District Judge Glenn H. Davidson sentenced Carrie Dwayne Stevens, 47, of Tupelo, who pleaded guilty to 2 counts of producing child porn. A law passed by Congress requires a mandatory 15-year sentence for creating child pornography. We'll include a link to the rest of that story, which appeared in a local newspaper, the Clarion Ledger. On a subject which is really not closely related, Matt Siddle, TVDXer in Nebraska, reported to WTFDA a revealing moment of Skip. around 23:30 Central Time, had a station fade up on Channel 2 from the north-northeast. It featured two women and one man all naked. I'll leave it to the imagination what they were all doing together. Any thoughts as to who would run softcore porn on Friday nights? A reply came from Keith K. Smith in Lansing, Michigan. Seeing naked and or revealing sex scenes on foreign TV is not uncommon. CBC and TV Ontario have been known to show such films. Often there's no rating nor warning given in our TV guide when these come on the air, and thus a border region viewer in the USA can be taken somewhat by surprise. I've even seen a nude scene on Dead Man's Gun when CHWY Channel 16 aired it. I guess that's a movie. No wonder they put it on TNN. Another reply came from Charles Gauthier in Quebec. Believe me, CBC and TVO are saints compared to TQS. Without a doubt, that was CFAP Channel 2 in Quebec City. I can personally confirm your reception. TQS runs Blue Movies every Friday and Saturday night. We're French, you see. Also reply from Guy Falsetti in Lockport, New York. Here in Western New York, we can get Ed the Sock on Friday night. They do the Naked News, among other things, and then Sex TV, Blue Movies, and Soft Porn on Saturday night, both on City TV out of Toronto. In fact, I watched Ed the Sock for the first time last week. Very funny comedy. There are often other shows that have nudity and such, often in French, on other channels out of Canada, all on UHF stations and not carried by local cable companies. Here's the scoop on the QSL situation for that 100-watt shortwave station in Calgary, Alberta, CFVP on 6030, from Ed Kusilik in Coaldale, Alberta. CKMX, the parent station on 1060 as well as 6030, is reluctant to verify. I even tried, after conversations with the station manager and director, to be their QSL verifier, but they declined my offer. Apparently, they have the situation under control, whatever that means. Prior to my conversation with the director of operations, the receptionist mentioned to me that they had quite a few overseas letters coming in and wondered what should she do with them. I told her about reception reports and that the letters were requests for verification replies. I still think she had no idea what I was talking about. That's it in a nutshell for the situation with stations in Calgary. This appeared in the Ontario DX Association. Since he's in northern South America, Alan Gonzalez in Venezuela has some success in pulling in shortwave pirates from North America, such as KIPM. He says a few months ago, Alan Maxwell sent me some email saying he was retiring from the waves since he had other personal matters to take care of. That's too bad, since KIPM is one of the most emblematic U.S. pirates. His extra-large QSLs are very unusual and spectacular in the DX world. According to him, there's still a possibility of returning to the air in the future. Let us hope so. This was dated May 26th. Next to Artie Bigley for a couple of May 20th stories about an FM pirate being shut down in Pensauken, Pennsylvania. From the Philadelphia Inquirer, federal authorities have shuttered an FM station which had been broadcasting illegally from Pensauken since Christmas, interfering with signals from Philadelphia area stations. U.S. Marshals and technical advisors from the FCC raided El Sol radio station, 95.3 seized equipment, said the owners had dismissed several FCC warnings that the station was operating without a license. It played Latino music, operated by the Moors of South Jersey, that considers itself outside the jurisdiction of the U.S. and not subject to U.S. laws, according to a court filing. I wonder if that makes it clandestine rather than pirate. In one response to the FCC, officials asserted that the broadcasts were authorized under the Moors' Great Seal. They presented documentation that included a so-called license and construction permit signed by a Queen Ali. An FCC engineer determined that the signal exceeded unlicensed low-power radio limits by more than 20,000 times. Among the stations complaining had been WMWX-FM 95.7 in Ballachinwood. That was from the Philadelphia Inquirer, and more about this appeared in the Courier Post. The station was being run in the 4600 block of Crescent Boulevard, Route 130 North, by the group, some of whose members are facing federal fraud charges for allegedly creating and passing more than $10 million in phony money orders. and the name of the group is given differently here. The Moors, also known as Al-Moroccan Empire. Florida is an even hotter bed of pirates. Terry Kruger tries to keep up with it all in his publication, Tocobaga DX. Some of the items in the 21 May edition. In the Tampa area, there's a pirate on 1620, which may be new, but he thinks it may be what was formerly on 1640, known as La Primerissima 1640 AM. Someone calling himself Richard Nervous sent him an item about a pirate in Lauderhill on 89.1. It had been known as Flavor FM. There's still a station there, very strong and in stereo. Not sure it's the same one as heard a year ago by that name. They appear after 5 p.m., maybe due to a new law that went in effect in Florida. Still rap with live DJs and play a lot of sped-up hip-hop songs with live phone calls. The next channel up, 89.3, has an unlicensed station in Land O'Lakes, Florida, which has recently been reconfirmed as still active. On 92.7 in Tampa, there was a Creole pirate heard on an early Saturday morning. Richard Nervous tells him of another one in Pompano Beach on 101.1 called Radio Nouvelle Vision, still doing live phone-in shows in the afternoons. Very weak from southern Fort Lauderdale. Not sure exactly where it's originating from. Finally, on 102.1, there's an unlicensed station calling itself WHGE for Hunters Green Elementary School in Tampa. There was an article about it in the Tampa Tribune. It's the school radio station, simulcasting student-produced television shows at 8 to 8:15 a.m., with patriotic songs, weather, sports reports, and school news. They plan to add a looping track of expanded info to run throughout the school day, a low-watt station with heard within 1 mile radius of the school, so it is Part 15 compliant and not really a pirate. All these items date back to the last half of May, so things may have changed since then, especially with summer vacations. Sporadic ETVDX from South Florida is very common in much of the eastern U.S., in fact, anywhere from roughly 700 to 1,400 miles from Miami. WPBT Channel 2 is often seen, including here in Enid. However, there is another Channel 2 in South Florida, which some people had picked up but been unable to identify. It's carrying the Telefutura network in Spanish. Danny Oglethorpe in the WTFDA says, heard at 6:45 p.m. Central Time, super strong for a couple of minutes. At 18:55, Telefutura, with its logo in the lower right, was mixed with WPBT. He also saw it for a couple of minutes the previous year. And finally, it's been identified. It's WTIGCA, Channel 2 in Fort Myers and Naples, Florida, according to the Telefutura station list. That is a low-power station. The suffix CA, which is now appearing more and more with low-power TV stations, apparently means Class A. This one is listed with 3 kilowatts and a plus offset. It was previously carrying the PAX network, but it's now Telefutura, which is an offshoot of the much larger Univision. You're listening to Continental Media, number 0405. If you'd like to read much more about the stories we mentioned, check the summary for this edition at worldupradio.com, where we'll have the issues of DX Listening Digest from which these stories come. Another WTFDA member, Christopher Dunn, has journeyed far south in Florida to see what he can pick up direct from Cuba. In fact, he went all the way to Key West and found a bunch of Cuban FM stations were audible. Getting accurate and complete info of Cuban radio is very difficult, so let's go over his list, because those much further north may be able to DX them, especially one in particular. 88.7 Radio Taino, probably not in Havana, but the others, unless specified, are 90.3 Radio Progreso, 91.7 Coco, 93.3 another Radio Taino, 94.1 Radio Enciclopedia, 94.9 presumably CMCA, 96.7 Radio Rebelde, which does not have high-power Florida stations to contend with, 98.1 Radio Taino, mentioning Varadero and Matanzas in its ads. 98.3 Radio Metropolitana, 99.1 CMBF Radio Musical, 99.9 Assumed Cadena Habana, 101.5 Radio Reloj, 104.7 Radio Rebelde, and 106.9, he thinks the only Cuba FM without a parallel on AM is called Havana Radio. Another country, those at least in the southeastern U.S. can dream about DXing, is the Cayman Islands. Media Network reports there is a new FM station there on 96.5. The license has been issued to Panorama Productions. It's expected to debut within 6 to 8 weeks of mid-June, with a wide range of adult contemporary rhythm and blues popular in Caribbean music. It's owned by the former director of tourism. This came from Cayman Net News, and the owner of Cayman's first radio station, Z99 FM, and of Rooster 101, said he welcomed the competition. But he warned of the difficulties of the country sustaining so many stations, especially if a bid by DMS Broadcasting for three more is successful. Then there is Jamaica, which for many years had only high-band TV stations, channel 7 or higher, which means getting them by sporadic e-skip would be almost impossible, even for those within range in the southeastern U.S. The World Radio TV Handbook has steadily cut back on the detail of its TV listings, but I see in the 2004 edition, 4 low-band stations on channel 4 are listed in Jamaica, owned by CVM Television Limited, in Cabbage Hill in St. Thomas, Marley Hill in St. Catherine, Berry Hill in St. Mary, and Kempshott in St. James. I think those are parishes or whatever Jamaican subdivisions are called. However, powers are not given, but most likely they're quite low power and would still be very difficult to DX. I mentioned this on the WTFDA list, and Bill Hepburn in Ontario, who maintains a Caribbean Central American low-band TV list, says there are actually several others. He discovered on a visit to Jamaica last year. All of these are on the Love TV station or network, Channel 2 in Montego Bay, Channel 3 in Ocho Rios or Lilyfield, Channel 6 in Kingston and St. Andrew. These are at least 100 watts. They were over-the-air stations and listed in the phone book. Of course, more and more as time goes on, we must be careful not to assume that a channel number actually represents a station on the air rather than cable. In the summary, we'll include a link to Bill Hepburn's list, as well as to a very useful page Danny Oglethorpe has been putting together during a lull in actual DX. It's titled Mexico, Latin America TV ID Tips and TV DX Photographs. One more TV oddity before we get on to other matters. One of the Channel 2 stations I used to pick up frequently was KBOI in Boise, Idaho. Many years ago, it changed calls to KBCI. And ever since then, I've figured it was a rather lame attempt to resemble graphically the original calls, KBOI, after ownership separated from the radio station. Does the C look almost like an O on their logo, I asked. And on the AM-FM TVDX list, Frank Aiden in Boise replied, yes, you're right, the original KBOI building had large letters around 4 feet high on the front in bronze or some metal. When they sold the station, they figured it was easier to just cut a section out of the O to make it a C. And they applied and got the calls KBCI. Here's an update via Harry Helms about problems the Nevada Highway Patrol has with its radio system. This appeared in the Review Journal in Las Vegas on June 17th. The NHP has moved one step closer to a legal radio system, switching its Las Vegas operations to a statewide communication system. Since switching to the new system, June 9th, troopers have been tracking problems so technicians can fix them. Until they're solved, they'll continue using their old system as backup. The patrol had to abandon its 150 MHz radio system because the agency never got licenses to operate on the system's frequencies. The FCC ordered the Highway Patrol to get off the frequencies or face massive fines. The patrol is yet to hear whether it will be fined. With nearly $10 million in new equipment, the patrol joined the Nevada Shared Radio System, a statewide radio network run by the Department of Transportation, running in the 800 MHz band, with better range and clarity. The old Motorola equipment eventually will be sold to recoup some of the $14 million it cost to install, illegally, just 3 years ago. As for legal low-power FM, REC Networks reported on June 21st, the FCC has granted what we believe are the first construction permits for a time-shared LPFM operation. Two licensees will be sharing 94.1 in the Visalia, California area. Friends of Radio Grito, Proyecto Campesino, will broadcast from 5 to 9 a.m. Monday through Saturday, while another group, Pacific Friends Outreach, will have the channel in the evenings from 5 to 9 Monday through Saturday. LPFM groups facing competing applications can reach a settlement that is agreed upon by all applicants. If the agreement involves a timeshare, each applicant must broadcast at least 10 hours per week. Meanwhile, Doug Smith reports to the WTFDA that the FCC has announced a window open until August 13th for settlements and amendments to a list of mutually exclusive non-commercial FM applications. There are 550 of them on hold. These applicants have until August 13th to either amend their applications to clear the mutual exclusivity by specifying another frequency, reducing power, moving the transmitter, or some combination, or to withdraw their applications from consideration. In cases where exclusivity cannot be cleared, the Commission's point system for non-commercial stations will be used. The Commission has also waived a regulation prohibiting applicants from accepting payment in return for dismissing an application, unless it's for legitimate and prudent applicant expenses, that is, the actual cost of filing and pursuing the application. The waiver will allow applicants to pay off completing applicants to dismiss their applications and clear mutual exclusivities. Also check DX Listening Digest 4099, where, thanks to Mike Cooper, we have an excerpt from the Congressional Record about the McCain and Leahy bill on low-power FM. This bill simply follows the FCC's recommendation, which had been blocked for a while by the NAB and NPR lobbies, to begin licensing low-power FM stations on third adjacent channels to full-power stations without limitations. If you want to research it further, the Senate bill number is S-2505. Artie Bigley sends a story from the DM Times about the campus radio station at Sol Ross State University in Alpine, Texas, KSRU 1670. Yes, it's in the X-band, but it's low power, and I'm not aware of anyone ever DXing it. This was written by Tom Michael. To learn more about college students, you really need to listen to them. An easy way is to tune your radio to 1670 AM to hear the official radio station of Sol Ross State University. You'll hear the music and opinions of local student DJs. What? Still can't hear them? Try listening from your car. A car radio tends to amplify weak signals better than a portable radio. Still can't hear them? Try driving over to campus. Broadcasting at 1/10 of a watt, KSRU does not exactly shout. In fact, its low power allows it to remain legal. It's not even classified as a licensed radio station, but a Part 15 station under FCC rules. Mike Cooper and Matt Francis send a Washington Post story of June 20th about a station small by commercial standards. Brock Whaley says it's 1 kilowatt on 1230. At Home on Air in the Valley, it's headlined by Mark Fisher. The morning man and midday host and evening sports play-by-play announcer on WAMM in Woodstock, Virginia, finishes up a noontime edition of Helping Hand, its swap shop of the air. No goats today, he says. In the Shenandoah Valley, where locals bump up against ever more weekenders and retirees from the Washington area, this swap shop is still a place where people call in to offer livestock, or in one recent case, frozen rats, 10 to a package for $20. More often than not, someone out there will bite. WAMM is the last radio station in Shenandoah County. Its weak signal sometimes gets lost in the static of the AM band, but it's the only place on the radio where anyone cares about elections in Tomsbrook or Strasburg, or the games played by high school teams, or the needs of county residents when the weather turns dangerous. This might not have seemed so extraordinary a decade or so ago, but one spring morning in 2002, the Shenandoah Valley woke up to hear that their big band station was now playing hip-hop and had been moved to Harrisonburg, 35 miles to the south. There were still four stations in Shenandoah County: Clear Channel, the media monolith that has bought up more than 1,200 stations nationwide, now owns 5 of the top 15 stations in the Harrisonburg market and 9 of the top 26 in the Winchester area. Shenandoah falls between those two markets. A group of locals, including former Washington Star reporters Peggy Boston and Joan Anderson, got together to mourn the loss of their local stations and found themselves impelled to act. In less than 3 months, they raised $200,000 from 19 investors, bought a station, and put it on the air. It's also attracting listeners around the world via www.radioshenandoah.com, which you must know how to spell. By the way, if you want to look up who owns, or I should say what corporation owns, what used to be your local radio stations, RecNets, which we mentioned earlier, has a useful website where you may do this. They have for a long time had FM query and AM query. For details, it's www.recnet.com, that's R-E-C-N-E-T, /FMQ or /AMQ. You'll also find links to ownership information at recnet.com/LPFM. Here's another Mark Fisher column from the Washington Post, May 23rd, via Tom McNiff, A New Age for Oldies Programming. He says, if you love the really old stuff, fear not, a new format is born. ABC Radio this spring launched its True Oldies channel, focusing on the years 1958 to 64. The programming is being offered primarily to AM stations, where music has been dying off for decades because of the far better sound quality on FM. But the great hits of the early rock era were recorded in monaural sound, for which AM radio should suffice. Starting in Cincinnati last year, several real oldies stations have popped up on AM, bringing back local hero DJs from the 60s and recreating the stations that originally played Chubby Checker, Connie Francis, The Four Seasons, Elvis, Chuck Berry, and so on. Does this mean the return of Washington Top 40 stations such as WOOK and WEAM? Stand by. Finally, this from Tom Shales in the Washington Post was quoted by Catholic Radio Update. On many a channel, one encounters laughter instead of the real world, or the manipulated reality served up by unscripted trash. But augmented or manufactured laughter at jokes or situations that aren't remotely funny, as is so common in network sitcoms, can in itself be numbing and depressing. It's like listening to a room full of crazy people laughing at random, at nothing, all dead between the ears. Faked happiness, meanwhile, is rampant in the phony bonhomie of local anchor teams that all love one another so much, and particularly adore the loud dolt who does sports and the fey nerd who does weather, and in the elation displayed by happy customers in commercials for products that many of us know firsthand are junk. Glenn Hauser concluding, Continental Media 0405 equals World of Radio Extra 50.